You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
In the United States, more than a million people a year are victims of rape or sexual assault. In Canada, almost 500,000 women reported a sexual assault in 2009. It's statistics like these that motivated the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in the U.S. to fund Growing Up with Media, a multi-year study looking at the roots of adult sexual violence. In 2010 and 2011, an online survey of more than 1,000 teenagers and young adults asked them if they had ever coerced someone into sexual activity. 1 in 10 said yes. Michelle Ibarra was the lead researcher of the study, published recently in the Journal of the American Medical Association Pediatrics. She joins me this morning from California to talk about the survey. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Why did you decide to look specifically at youth?
So when you talk to sexual offenders who are in the system, who are in jail, and you ask them when the first time is that they first offended, overwhelmingly the majority say that it happened during adolescence. So we've known for a while that it seems that sexual violence likely emerges in adolescence, but there really hasn't been a whole lot of research going directly to young people and asking them these sensitive questions.
What did you actually ask participants?
So we asked them four different questions, and we asked about attempted rape, and we said, have you ever tried, but you weren't able to make somebody have sex with you when you knew they did not want you to? We also asked about, we call it completed rape, and so that would be when you made somebody have sex with you when you knew that they did not want to. And then the coercive sex was, have you ever gotten somebody to give into sex with you when you knew they did not want you to? And then we asked a more general question about sexual assault. And we asked whether or not they have kissed, touched, or done anything sexual with another person when they knew that person did not want them to.
So the language you were using was very much something kind of down to earth that they could understand and relate to.
That's exactly right. We talked to 14 to 21-year-olds. It's obviously a very broad age range, and so we wanted to make sure that young people really understood the words that we were using.
Now, were you surprised when you heard when you found out that many of the participants in the survey said yes?
You know, I don't think we really went in with any particular expectation. We certainly know that sexual assault and sexual violence victimization is more common than we would want it to be. And so that then within that backdrop, having almost 1 in 10 young people say that they've forced somebody to do something they knew they didn't want to does parallel what we know about victimization.
Did you ask them what the circumstances were and why they did it?
We didn't really ask about why they did it, although we did ask about the tactics that they used. So, for example, you know, arguing and pressuring the victim, guilting them. We also asked them about the consequences, so whether or not somebody learned about what happened, and if so, you know, whether or not they got in trouble.
Did you get the sense that they in any way were seeing this as a negative thing that they had done?
Well, you know, we did ask sort of how responsible they thought they were for what happened and how responsible they thought the other person, so the victim, was. And what we found is that only 1 in 3 thought that they themselves were completely responsible for what happened. And conversely, about half said that the victim was completely responsible for what happened.
Did they know the victims?
Yes. In all cases, they knew the victim. So about 75% of the time, so 3 in 4 perpetrators, the victim was a boyfriend or a girlfriend. And 1 in 4, it was somebody they knew at school, a friend, or they knew them in some other way.
Now, you say a boyfriend or a girlfriend, so I guess that then leads me to the question. Were there differences between the adolescents you talked to, the boys and the girls, or the young men and the young women?
We did see a few differences, and perhaps the biggest difference between female perpetrators and male perpetrators is that females appear to start perpetrating about a year and a half older than male perpetrators. So the average age for sort of first perpetration, the first time that you do something like this, for males is just under 16 years of age, whereas for females who report perpetrating, they're about 17 and a half years old the first time they do it on average.
Now, one of the interesting things in the study is you identified women as perpetrators, but that's not our common kind of, I guess, assumption about who commits sexual assault.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting how research reflects our cultural norms and values. And so for a very long time in research, we asked the boys the perpetrator questions and the girls the victim questions. And so we really didn't have any data about males as victims and females as perpetrators. And so it turns out when we ask both sexes about perpetration, that we do have female perpetrators, and that even, you know, particularly when we look at sexual assault, that actually males and females are equally likely to be perpetrators.
Did you ask people in the survey to identify by racial group?
We did. So when we look at the composition of perpetrators for those who are white versus non-white, in general, we don't see a whole lot of difference, so that perpetrators are equally likely to be white or non-white. There are a couple instances when they're actually more likely to be white. So, for example, perpetrators who reported coercive sex, so getting somebody to give in to having sex when they knew that other person did not want to, those perpetrators were more likely to be white than non-perpetrators.
Okay. Now, as I said in my introduction, the largest study is called Growing Up with Media, and it's concerned with exposure to violent media. Did you find a correlation between viewing violence and coercing someone into sex?
Yes, so we asked about three different types of media. We asked about exposure to violence generally, and we define that as watching television shows, playing games, those types of things, where you see people physically shooting, hurting, killing other people. And then we also asked about exposure to sexual content, so when you're watching television shows and movies and those types of things, how often do you see people kissing, fondling, and having sex? And then we asked about exposure to X-rated material, where the content is people having sex. And based upon the adult literature, we thought that it would be important to differentiate between X-rated material and X-rated material that shows violent content, so when one person is hurting another person in a sex act. And so we looked at all of these three different types of media, and what seems to be sort of consistently different across all of the four different types of sexual violence that we looked at was that young people who were perpetrators were more likely to also say that they had viewed violent X-rated material in the past year.
Now, you started off at the beginning of our conversation saying that not much work has been done asking teenagers and young people these kinds of questions. Were there important differences that came out between this kind of study of young people and a similar kind of study of adults?
You know, that's a hard question, and I don't know if I know the answer, but what I can say is that when we do studies of adults and we ask them to sort of think back, think back when you were an adolescent, it often is hard to remember and to report accurately. So, and this is true not just of sexual assault, right, just in general. You know, when we're 30 and we're trying to remember exactly the first time that we did something, for example, the first time that you rode a bike or the first time you did some other behavior, it's hard to accurately recall the exact age or even the exact circumstance. And so what's different about this study versus studies of adults is that we're asking them in real time, and so that we would expect and hope that these data are actually a more accurate reflection of what is really happening in adolescence.
So you can really pin down something that becomes much more important later in life?
That's right.
Okay. What kind of intervention do you think could shift these numbers in some way so that not such a huge number of teenagers are engaging in this kind of behavior?
Well, what we're really hoping that will come out of this study is that parents will have conversations with their children about healthy sex and unhealthy sex. And I know that even, you know, just having conversations about sex is not always comfortable. But I think that given that the average age of first perpetration is 16 years old, that we absolutely need to be talking to our young people about healthy and unhealthy sex. And healthy sex is when both people are wanting to have sex. And unhealthy sex is when, you know, one person doesn't want to, and they either need to be encouraged or convinced or sometimes even made to have sex. That's not healthy at all. And I think having those conversations with our young people when they're in secondary school and high school, that is absolutely critical. I think another important thing that we could do is implement school-based programs, community-based programs that are really focused on what we call bystanders. So people who are not necessarily involved directly, they're not necessarily a perpetrator or a victim in this experience, but they're a friend or they're a classmate or they somehow learn about what happened. And we need to encourage young people who are bystanders to step up and to talk to adults, to share what they know so that the perpetrator can meet consequences.
I'm thinking back 15 or 20 years ago when possibly one of the things we would have been saying at the end of this conversation is that we need to restrict the access of teenagers to violent media, but I guess that horse is out of the barn.
So, you know, I certainly think that it's violent X-rated material specifically that seems to be particularly concerning. So certainly, you know, if you learn that your child or a child that you know is consuming violent pornography, that definitely is reason to have further conversations. I think violent material more generally, there certainly is a lot of research now to support the hypothesis that violent media is related to aggressive and even violent behavior. We do have kids, and I can't remember the percent, but it's something like 1 in 5 young people say that they actually don't have a lot of violence in their media. So it is possible to raise your children in a sort of violent media-free way. But if that is just not something that really fits with your lifestyle, then it's absolutely critical to watch television with your children, to listen to the music that your children are listening to be in the room with the games that your kids are playing. And if they're too violent, if the games are too upsetting for you, then your children probably shouldn't be playing those games. But what's important is that as you're viewing and engaging in this media with your children, you can talk to them about the content that they're being exposed to and really help them understand how it reflects real life and often it does not reflect real life.
Thank you so much for talking to me this morning, Michelle. It's been really interesting.
Thank you so much for having me.
I've been speaking with Michelle Ibarra. She's lead researcher of a recent study on the prevalence of sexual violence perpetrated by teenagers and young adults.